Ready to go?
Whenever you are, brother.
All right, everybody. Welcome to episode 159 of the new and improved Scary Dad podcast.
Here we are.
It is Wednesday, October 14th, 2020. And here we are. We're back. It's a little strange because we're in an echoey room and I'm trying to figure out if my microphone and everything. I'm used to doing things online now where I can look at monitors and see things. But this is the way the format was for the longest time.
Yeah, we've been doing this for long enough to where I think we'll be fine.
So I think we're good. So how you been, man?
I've been not too bad, dude, but I came to a realization today. You know, recently with quarantine and everything, you're looking for stuff to do, stuff to kill time with, and I'm sure you are too, mm-hmm. All of a sudden, joined all these horror groups, and I'm starting to realize it's probably not the best thing for me. Because just some of the crap I see posted in some of these groups, it's enough to make your eyes bleed. I think you saw what I posted earlier today.
Uh-huh.
This guy saying his top 10 most overrated horror movies, and in that list is The Thing, Poltergeist, Alien, Rosemary's Baby, which I actually think is just a phenomenal movie. I love Rosemary's Baby. That's a movie I don't get bored with. Definitely go over. And I can see some of the stuff that he has on there. Like, I honestly feel Blair Witch, even though it was a groundbreaking movie and it started a trend of a new style of horror movie, I didn't think it was that good. I never really cared for Blair Witch too much.
Well, I mean, if you want to, for what it's worth, and I saw that list, and that list was kind of...
suspect.
gives you Forrest Whitaker eye. Like, the stupid just kind of burns. But, you know, to be fair, there are some things like, you know... It's like, you and I probably disagree on Rosemary's Baby. I read the book before I saw the movie,
uh-huh.
And that book just kind of, there was so much paranoia and dread, and it was such a strange sort of feeling of cabin fever almost, because she was so locked away.
Right.
The movie didn't capture it. So the movie, to me, kind of fell flat compared to the book, and this isn't one of those the book's better than... It's just like, I never appreciated the movie because the book kind of gave away the ending, obviously,
mm-hmm.
and the movie was not able to recreate it the proper
way. Right.
I don't think the movie's overrated. I just think that for me personally, I didn't like it. But you can't go with some of these things and say it's... I mean, certainly there is maybe an overreaction. There's probably a whole lot of people who, I know there's a lot of people who wear Thrasher t-shirts and don't skateboard, and there's a lot of people who wear Slayer t-shirts and don't listen to Slayer. Slayer's a hard band to listen to.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a whole lot of little, you know, teeny boppers running around jamming to Slayer, even though the shirts look cool. I think people jump in and... They think it's cool to not like stuff, which we've always been very adamant about not doing.
Yes.
Like, I don't like stuff that sucks, so I'm not going to spend my time thinking about it.
Right.
I just over the shoulder and whatever. But yeah, horror groups.
Yeah,
critical groups. This
is a Yeah, but other than that, just getting ready for Halloween. Everybody's getting their costumes together and stuff, of course.
I have another notebook. This afternoon project or this weekend project, I'm going to build my little candy jettison, my candy cannons. That'll be a weekend project.
Cool.
I've got a couple of different little designs I'm going to do. Should be pretty fun. I don't know if I want to just because we're going to be having a party, so I don't want to complicate it for whoever happens to be manning the cannon. So I don't want, because I was going to put it like on a swivel.
Yeah.
Where you could like blast it at different kids, like drop like two or three and swing it around and have it kind of come out the end.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm like, the most likely person that's going to be dropping the candy in is my daughter standing on a stool. So I'm not going to make it. So, but it's still going to be pretty neat. So we'll figure it out. But was going to go kick back. This is one of those weird things because I wrote it down before I realized that we'd already discussed it in the past. So I'm going to ask Mr. Gomez to introduce us.
First, the old business.
And the only real pertinent piece of old business is today's the 14th of October, and on this date in 2017 was the first Scary Dad's Haunted Halloween show.
Nice.
Yep, it was 3 years ago today that we basically cut the ribbon on that. It was a small little, it was basically a one-room con with a couple of little side rooms that we added on with a little movie room and a hallway. It was, I think our capacity was overreached by just the vendors being in the rooms.
Right.
And we got blasted by Hurricane Harvey that happened in August. So a lot of our clientele was still
recovering from that. Yeah. Right.
But people got to come out. They had a good time. Everybody had a blast. With a couple of exceptions, and those exceptions were not because they didn't enjoy the show, but because of prior commitment, every vendor signed on for the following year, which they did again. So we've had the same cadre of vendors that have followed us year to year. Unfortunately, for 2020, we got canceled by the COVID, which is something we haven't really talked about because we haven't really been together. So for those of you who've been keeping up with us and want to know what the situation is with 2020, which obviously you know what the situation is with 2020 and COVID, but I can give you a little play-by-play of what is going on with the Halloween show per se. So for those of you not in the know, you can't just cancel an event that you have booked with a hotel or a convention center or an event complex.
Because there are contracts involved.
Because there's contracts. And what those contracts stipulate is that really neither party, like, you can't sign a contract to have your show or your band play or whatever or your wedding at a hotel and then have the hotel decide to bump you because a higher paying contract comes along that wants to rent more space. Mm-hmm. Once you're booked and then you can't change that. That's why you have a contract. There is a force in all the contracts called, or it's a clause in the contracts called a force majeure. And that says that if the event is canceled because of, like, inclement weather, a disaster, a war,
alien invasion.
A government shutdown, if it's shut down by something that's not within either of your or the hotel's power, then the contract becomes null and void, your deposits are returned, and there's no harm, no foul, and you're not out all of this money. So there's a lot of people online who are upset watching shows and events not being canceled throughout COVID, especially the ones that happened later in the year, because they're like, oh my God, that's irresponsible. It wasn't irresponsible. They were waiting for that force majeure clause
to kick in
because it's usually within a 30 or 60, 90 day situation. Well, I got a phone call from the hotel that essentially, they didn't let us out of our contract. They said, because of the COVID and the government orders and social distancing and all of that stuff, that it was not going to be feasible to have an event that success required a whole bunch of people coming and being in a room at the same time. So they said, hey, why don't we do this? We'll move you to an indeterminate date in 2021. Everything still as is, and we'll just move the dates. So that was fine. We knew that was going to happen anyway. We had no, we didn't think we were going to be executing in 2020 anyway. But then come to find out, about 3 weeks after that little phone call, I get another phone call from the events coordinator at the hotel informing me that the hotel has changed ownership and the new owners are not going to honor contracts because the nature of the business is changing. So the hotel's either going to become an apartment building or they're going to tear it down and build something else, but it's no longer going to be a hotel, so those contracts don't transfer, and all contracts are null and void post September 29th. Well, what that meant was, had COVID not knocked us out of the game, we would have found ourselves homeless.
Yeah, looking for a new venue.
3 days before the event, we would have been trying to find a new venue with all of our advertising, all of our, like, everything. And so the Scary Dad's Haunted Halloween show is probably the one event that's been actually, COVID actually helped us out, because we got canceled, we got let out of our contract before we just got booted. Mm-hmm. So, we still need to find a new venue, and we need to set everything up for 2021, but we will, and everything is still on the rails. We just don't know where the train is yet. But we'll figure that out. But anyway, that is it for old business. Let's take a break real quick, and we'll come back with the new.
Toys R Us has the Big Bird Halloween costume and the Yoda Halloween costume for trick-or-treating.
Glorious day.
And the complete breakfast with
Boo Berry.
Huh? Into the waves, Boo.
Bye bye. Frankenberry has strawberry flavored sweeties.
Count Chocula has chocolate sweeties.
And Boo Berry with berry flavored sweeties.
And here are the mini monsters. 5 monsters in all. You can trade them with friends and put on a show. 1 mini monster in specially marked boxes of the Monster cereals.
We're back. Okay.
Yes, we are, Mr. Gomez, if you will.
New business is new business, and this is new business.
All right, the big news this week, of course, which it's amazing how many people this affected. Immediately, my timeline for the next day was full of tributes to this man, but we lost a legend in rock and roll in Eddie Van Halen. At the age of 65 years old, Eddie died of throat cancer. I've read so many stories as of late, just people reminiscing about Van Halen, you know, from the guy that discovered him to, you know, even Pee Wee Herman, you know, throwing his 2 cents in there about Eddie Van Halen and the band itself. But I know they, especially in the height of the MTV generation, as far as music videos and stuff, Van Halen was huge, and just not just musically, but just the videos stand out in my mind so much. Just mm-hmm. the stuff they used to put on TV, and I'm sure you got some thoughts on it.
Certainly, it's funny because Van Halen was one of those. There's so many bands out there, but Van Halen's one of those that you just kind of always assume is going to be around. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like. They're going to be playing. They're like going to be like the Rolling Stones, maybe. That they just keep on going. They keep on, you know. Maybe they take a break here and there, and then they come back or whatever. And then, of course, being a kid in the '80s, and you have those different, you know, all those riffs stuck in your head in those videos, right. And you know, even when David Lee Roth went solo, and he's got, you know, his. You know, it's like, it's still a touch of Van Halen and all of that stuff. Sammy Hagar. You don't listen to old Sammy Hagar, you hear Van Halen. It's the influence of Van Halen on all of it. And, Van Halen's one of those that... Even if you didn't like the band... You can't argue with how influential they were on a lot of different people, and a lot, you know, on showmanship, on musicianship, on just so many different things. My uncle told me a story a long, long time ago how he went to go see Black Sabbath, and Van Halen opened for him, and it was like early '80s, like Van Halen wasn't even known yet. So Van Halen's opening for Black Sabbath, and said that Van Halen absolutely just blew him away. Like afterwards, the Black Sabbath show was just kind of like put off kilter because of the energy coming out of Van Halen. Mm-hmm. So I didn't even know he was sick.
Yeah,
me you know, either. Apparently he'd been fighting it for a pretty long time, and I mean, cancer sucks.
Yeah,
and a lot of those old rocker guys, you know, unfortunately, you had the smoky bars and the strained vocals and, you know, a lot of other stuff that was just not, you know, never really thought about it before until not too long ago. I was reading Bruce Dickinson's autobiography, and he was talking about how the first time they toured Canada, He says, in England, whenever you hear about bad weather, it means you might get wet and probably get a little chilly. He says, in Canada, it'll straight up kill you. And so, like, they're stepping out of buses and off of planes into this, like, below zero temperatures in places they've never been before and immediately got sick.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about that, that's your lifestyle.
Right.
Like, you know, so put your body through the ringer, you know? It's unfortunate.
Yeah, yeah, it was definitely a sad day in rock and roll for sure. It was just, wasn't expected at all. I mean, it caught a lot of people off guard because, like I said, not many people knew he was sick. So,
let me tell you how innovative this is. You know that song, Ain't Talking About Love?
Yeah.
Okay, it's got one of the most recognizable guitar riffs just to start it off. The dun 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 dun. You know what that is?
Hmm.
That is three of the absolute most common chords that you can possibly play. Okay, when you first sit down to learn how to play the guitar, they teach you how to play these three chords, and every little kid who's sitting there trying to learn how to get to play the guitar come out of their first lesson trying to learn how to play like these three chords. It's an A minor, I think it's an A minor, a D, and a G, but it's certainly an A minor.
Mm-hmm.
And to listen to that and be like, what the hell is he doing? And then to find out that all it is it's a master in control of his instrument,
right,
that can make these most basic of basic notes sound incredible.
Right.
And just melt your face with awesome, right? So, I mean, there's no overrated Van Halen.
Right.
He was on top of his game from day one.
And pretty much everybody is in agreement to that. Everybody agrees that he's just legendary, you know, and his influence touched a lot of people. I think it was, I can't remember his name, but from Alice in Chains said, you know, when you think of rock legends, you think of two people, Jimi Hendrix, Eddie Van Halen. Those are the two that you think of.
Mm-hmm.
So that says a lot right there.
Definitely.
Okay, a couple other stories before we get into the horror market. Just a couple things that I found that I thought were interesting. I got a couple of shark stories, but I'll just go with one right now. Off the coast of Nova Scotia recently, some researchers were catching and tagging some great white sharks for their research program to keep track of them. They ended up catching what has been recorded as the largest great white shark ever caught. It was a female at a length of 17 foot 2 inches, weighing 3,541 pounds. And look at the size of that beast next to,
wow,
that guy right there. They're calling her the, what was it? They gave her a little name. Queen of the Ocean. Because she was just a beast. Basically, she was the length of a Ford F-150. And weighed a lot more than 3,500 pounds. It's among the 12 biggest sharks ever tagged, and the biggest female for sure. But that was pretty impressive. I thought that you would like hearing about that one. And a little levity today. You know, I always like to bring that. Okay, UK Wildlife Park. They had taken in a bunch of African gray parrots, adopted in the same week, and they put them in isolation while everything was going on with the quarantine. Nobody was coming to the zoo, so they had all these parrots. They just happened to adopt, like, the week before quarantine. They put them away in isolation, where apparently one of them knew how to curse and taught everybody in the group how to curse. So they get out of quarantine, people start coming out, and all this entire group of parrots just started cursing at the customers whenever the zoo opens. But I think that is just the most awesome story, man.
That is awesome.
it appears they used their time in isolation teaching each other foul language, which left park staff in hysterics, but swift action had to be taken when they started using obscenities at guests. Steve Nichols, the CEO at the Frisney Park, said the birds were put into a timeout, but admitted over the last 25 years it's taken in many parrots that have sometimes had a bit of a blue language. But during those times they could separate them and everything, but these parrots had enough time to go to school and learn some very choice words.
So years ago, and you know, parrots are awesome, but years ago, my friend Robin, she and I were going up to visit my friend Chris up in Denton, and on the way, she was like, oh, we're going to stop at my dad's house and have dinner. So we go up to her dad's house, and the dad, you know, pull up and get out of the car, and the garage door is open, and in the garage is this parrot, and the parrot's sitting there talking. It's saying words, and, you know, it's saying hello and pleased to meet you and blah 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 blah. And they also have this little dog, like I think the dog's like named Penny or something. So, you know, we hang around, we talk or whatever, and it's dinner time, so we're all sitting around the dinner table, you know, so having a steak dinner. And the funniest thing is that bird out in the garage would mimic her stepmom's voice and call the dog. And so you're sitting there, and the mother is sitting right there, and you hear off in the distance, like, Penny! And the dog hops up and goes and runs, and then comes back looking all confused. It was the coolest thing.
All right, and last but not least today, we're going to, of course, talk about the event coming up, which is very exciting. Houston Horror Film Festival will be putting on a horror pop-up market October 24th from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Marriott Hobby Airport on the south side of Houston, 9100 Gulf Freeway in Houston, Texas. It is going to be a great show. Tickets have actually sold out. Vendor spaces have sold out. We will be keeping to a strict 250-person capacity. But the way we're going to do it is, of course, not all 250 people are going to go at the same time. So there will be tickets available at the door, but pre-sale tickets will get priority. They'll be the first ones allowed in, and if there's room, we'll be letting in the people buying at the door.
So if people show up and leave, they'll sell an additional ticket to back it up.
Yeah, there'll be people monitoring who's coming in, who's coming out, and keeping the number at 250 inside the room. So there'll definitely be some people going to be there all day, of course. There'll be some time that we'll be able to let some folks in. To check it out, but that is going to be a great time. Of course, we've got some celebrity guests that are going to be there, including Andrew Bernarski, who took over the mantle of Leatherface. A lot of people know him from, he's a character actor, he's been in a ton of movies, from Street Fighter to The Program to Higher Learning to what is the Bruce Willis movie? Hudson Hawk. Mm-hmm. He was Butterfinger and Hudson Hawk, and of course he took over the Leatherface mantle. He was at Comic Palooza last year, actually. He's a really, really cool guy. I like him a lot. Also going to see Jennifer Banco, who was in Friday the 13th, Part 7. Sandy Johnson, of course, who we recently interviewed. And I'm definitely looking forward to meeting Sandy. She seems just like the sweetest lady. And, of course, one of the greatest scream queens that we've had yet, Felissa Rose, will be there. Of course, groundbreaking film Sleepaway Camp, which has one of the craziest endings you will ever see in a horror movie. Plus, she's been in a ton of stuff. She's a huge supporter of independent film. She's been working nonstop in all kinds of movies, from Victor Crowley to all kind of other stuff. So it will be a good time as far as the guests go. There's also going to be some pretty cool vendors there, just so you know. I was going to go through a few of those. There's going to be some great artists there. If you're looking for some original art pieces, some one-of-a-kind pieces, Art by Albert will be there, who happens to be my friend. Art Albert is the guy that runs that, but it's all his own work that he'll be selling, originals and stuff. Crypt Kitty Designs, an artist of horror-themed original art. A lot of it featuring the mascot of her company called Boris Pauloff, which is a little horror cat, which is pretty cool. Some of the other artists we are going to be having is Ink of Geek, who has original pen and ink pop culture illustrations that are phenomenal. It's basically portraits of just all kind of horror characters and all kind of stuff. It's really, really good stuff. Leslie Marquez Designs, handmade art and decor, everything from skulls to hearts to creepy things all around. Mark Nasso, who does sketch cards of different pop culture figures also. And those are the artists we're going to be having, and there's a bunch of makers that are going to be there too. There's one vendor which I think is awesome. He makes prop replicas of Pamela Voorhees' head, which I think is just so cool, man. From what I understand, they look phenomenal too. Frankenplush does all these cool crochet themed horror art. Some of the things that I saw he did is an Audrey 2 that stands like 2 foot high, that's all crocheted together with all the tentacles coming out and stuff. And the Hocus Pocus Witches, he does all kind of cool stuff with that. Disco Bloodbath, collectible shadow boxes, all kind of 3D based art involving pop culture, cult classics, and horror based themes, which are going to be pretty cool. designs by Suprema, t-shirts, wood decor, signs, all kind of original art, things that you, one-of-a-kind items that you can pick up. And of course, we're going to have our good friends Tom Martino and Joe Garcia of the DWN Terrible Horror Crap podcast will be there. Tom, of course, representing DWN Productions, where you get some of the best masks and replica props you can find. And Joe Garcia, who just blows me away with his t-shirts as far as the prices, quality, everything else. And he does custom work also at a very, very good price. We're going to have Obscure Houston, which is the... this is all kind of unique jewelry and stuff. I think they have some Wicca items also over there, but it's one of the local stores here. Rebel Element, who makes candles, soap, bombs, and oils. And Sci-Fi Cowgirl, of course, will be there with our good friend Christine Nix with all kind of original art pieces. She's a great crafter. She's an incredible maker. And So Creepy Designs, one of our other vendors, will be in the house too. And one-of-a-kind plush items. I think she's doing masks and all kind of stuff now too. We shall also have Great Scott Collectibles, run by Scott Cook. Sells toys, memorabilia, and collectibles himself. Misfit Toys will be in the house with Daniel and Paulina. So they'll be there just to fulfill your horror toy needs. They've got a great collection. Three stores in Houston. Check them out if you ever get a chance. Good friend El Ariachi will be there. Randy with OMG Toys. Sammy's Goodies, which they provide exclusive collectibles that they make. And also, Veronica Smith, one of our favorite authors, will be in the house. She's another one of our folks. She her work can also be found at Sci-Fi Cowgirl Store in the Antique Mall in Houston. But they've got some great vendors that are going to be there. They're going to see some cool one-of-a-kind stuff. Definitely looking forward to it, man.
That's what always gets my money is the oddball stuff that you can't get everywhere else.
Right.
Like that's what draws me in. That's where I'm like, go broke.
Well, I think I told you there's a commission. I want to ask Cody Chevy how much it would cost for me to do, but I know that it's going to hurt my pocketbook too much. Once he gives me the price, I'm just going to keep it to myself for right now until something changes. Well, I'll actually be able to buy it. But that's it for our new business today. Oh, and one more guest this week. Honestly, when it popped up the same day as Eddie Van Halen, as a matter of fact, is Johnny Nash.
Yeah.
Houston's own Johnny Nash, who had the hit song, I Can See Clearly Now, The Rain Is Gone, which was redone by Jimmy Cliff. Just a great song. It's a song that it comes on and you just feel happy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one of those infectious grooves that he died at the age of 80. But that's what I got today.
Well, rock and roll, man. Well, let's put a fork in that one, and we'll take a break. See you shortly.
Wanna go psycho with me, Elvira, here at the Bates Motel? Look for me wherever they sell mug root beer. And enter the Go Psycho with Elvira contest. You can be my guest at Universal Studios in Hollywood for a monstrous bash at the Bates Motel. Shower, anyone? This Halloween, go psycho with Elvira and win a party with mug root beer and me.
I love my mug.
I love it.
Here we are.
So would you say that we are in a bit of a horror renaissance?
Yes, and it's definitely building up momentum. It's odd how... I'm not saying that I don't like the fact, but it seems as though... the horror genre is picking up a lot of steam with people not traditionally horror fans. And it's been pretty impressive, man. And I think just horror is one of those platforms that you can jump into where you don't need a huge budget. You just need some really good ideas and a really good vision and somebody to put that together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the low-budget horror movie... the ones that we had coming up in the 80s and everything, it's amazing the respect they get now.
Well, and I was going to say, because, you know, in researching the subject of our show today, you and I have talked a lot about different franchises, but specifically like the Friday the 13th series and how it's like the seventh largest movie franchise, period.
Mm-hmm.
Not horror movie franchise, but like franchise.
Right.
So, you know, for the comparisons, you know, you've got like the Star Wars franchise, and you've got like the Harry Potter franchise, you know, freaking Friday the 13th is number 7 mm-hmm. in those
immortal blockbusters.
But then whenever you read about the story of that franchise, you'll know that basically if opening night was a success, there was a phone call made that said, make another one. And they were all low budget, and whoever made them had more or less complete creative control. They were given a budget, and that was about it. So here's some money, don't go over budget, and make another one. And then what seemed to happen as you started to kind of come into the end of the 80s and into the 90s, suddenly it was like the studio started paying attention, and they were like, oh, well, we, you know, if we make it PG-13, we'll get a bigger audience.
Right.
More people can go actually see it on opening night, or, you know, an opening weekend. But what happened was it got watered down.
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of what made the movies in the 80s great, because they had singular vision, and they had low budget, but they had a kind of hands-off approach from the studio. Studio didn't care. Make it, cut it, throw it up on the screen. If it does well, we'll make another one. If it doesn't, we'll end it there. You know what I mean? And that wasn't just with Friday. That was with Halloween. That was
right.
with Hellraiser. That was with
Nightmare on Elm Street.
You know, a lot of these, if you watch the first one, it's not made for a sequel. You know, Nightmare on Elm Street was certainly. I mean, they had that little cut-in piece at the very end. But there's no way that you knew that that bad guy was going to become one of the... It was going to become Freddy Krueger
right.
of, you know what I mean?
Well, it's like I told you at the time I was talking to Robert Englund. I got to spend some time with him. One of the things he told me is, because I asked him, I said, where's the first glove at? You know, that's Smithsonian Institute level stuff. And he said, well, you know, we made the first movie. We didn't think it was going to do much. So I just gave it to my agent because we started shooting a sequel and we had a new glove. So I gave it to him. So his first agent that he had mm-hmm. has this glove sitting in his office because... Okay. He didn't think the movie was going to be that big of a deal.
So then enter, you know, so then we have a real, you know, we have a few good movies. So like it's not complete crap. So we have like The Blair Witch Project, which independent,
mm-hmm.
you know, we have some movies that traverse this long and dusty highway between the end of the 80s and the, let's say the starting at like 2010, you have a new player enter the game. And that's what we're talking about today.
Yes.
Because in the last 10 years, horror has really... I mean, it popped up on my memories that I started Scary Dad 8 years ago. Okay? In 8 years... 8 years ago, the reason I started Scary Dad as a blog is because except for... one website, it was kind of Haunter's website, and I can't even remember what it was called. Except for that one, there was nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing else, so I decided to create it. Now, that's half of YouTube is makeup and effects and
right.
that kind of stuff. So,
well, the fan base has definitely grown tremendously over the last decade, and you can look at a lot of things. Just one, look at the number of blockbuster horror movies we have nowadays. You know, before, the only blockbuster they ever had really was Silence of the Lambs. But it's just gotten huge. And the studios see, once again, that little bit of money, incredible return. And one of the guys that mastered that is, of course, Jason Blum. You know, you can't watch a horror movie now. It's so rarely you watch a horror movie now, and during the opening credits, you don't see a Blumhouse production.
Mm-hmm.
He has 79 movies total they have so far that they've done. In Blumhouse, the Blumhouse production company was founded in 2000, so exactly 20 years ago. So within the last 20 years, this guy's done 80 movies, basically, which is pretty damn impressive.
Yeah.
He's worked with some tremendous directors, in Mike Shyamalan, Jordan Peele, Christopher Landon, James Wan, Mike Flanagan. And the way they started, he started this... this formula of low budget, make it clean, edit it, get it out there. And he started that with Paranormal Activity. And I remember when Paranormal Activity came out, it wasn't because I didn't really care for Blair Witch too much, it looked like it was going to be a Blair Witch type project, and I didn't know if I really wanted to see it. And then they did this awesome thing where they started recording audience reactions and using that in their marketing. And that was, that's what turned me on. I said, I got to see this movie.
Yeah.
And
those were I was almost the same way. Because it wasn't so for us, like, I really enjoyed Blair Witch. I thought, and I'll defend it all the way down. Like, I don't like to rewatch it because of the shaky cam makes you dizzy, which was a problem at the theater when people were throwing up. So it is not a fun movie to watch, but it is extremely groundbreaking in using viral marketing, in using found footage, in using just a creepy concept, and then just going all in on it, right? And like you said, low budget, good story, go. I thought same thing, because after Blair Witch, then every movie was about campers,
footage.
Campers lost in the woods being chased by a witch, only her name was Claire. And you're just like, nope. And then Paranormal Activity came and kind of revamped that entire thing, in that it is still video and it is still low budget, but oh my God. Like,
it's done so well,
it's
man.
It's done so
and
well.
The jump scene, the jump scares are, and like we talked before, so people don't like jump scares. I like jump scares, especially when they get me every damn time.
Right.
You know, even though you know they're coming, it still gets you because they're so well done. Mm-hmm. And that movie, the Paranormal Activity movies were just so masterful at that. And the return of investment on Paranormal Activity was just, it was sick. It was made for $15,000. That's how much it cost to make Paranormal Activity. It grossed over $193 million worldwide.
And that's why that guy has a studio that's doing 80 movies.
Yes. this movie Insidious, which they actually had all three of them on American Movie Classics last night. Worldwide budget, the budget on that one was $1.5 million. It grossed $99 million worldwide. I mean, it's just his ability to find these scripts and take them on, and just, and now his name is secure to where, you know, you want to, if it's a Blumhouse movie, you want to check it out at least once, you know, because chances are it's going to be a good film. Some of the bigger movies that have come from Blumhouse Productions, of course, Paranormal Activity, Insidious, Sinister, The Purge series.
So let's talk about Sinister, because Sinister is on my list of scariest movies ever.
Okay.
I mean, and this is through the 80s, through the 90s. Like, this is all of it, because Sinister was so unexpected.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't really know much about it going in. You knew, you know, it had a little monster, you know, it had Ethan Hawke in it. So you're like, okay, what's the, you know. But my sister and I went and saw Sinister, and that creeped me out. Like, it was, and it was so unexpectedly violent. Even in the opening scene, you know, it's like with the log falling off the tree, the tree log being cut, and then the family being slowly hung and stuff. It was just like, oh my God. Sinister was shockingly good. And I put it up there on the shelf with a lot of my, you know, with very only a few movies that have really got to me.
Right.
Like, really stuck in my head and like didn't want to go away. So no, it's badass.
Well, and The Purge, look at what happened with The Purge. I mean, that movie blew up, and it ended up being developed into a TV series eventually. That's another huge one that just captivated audiences. There was Oculus, there was The Gift,
which, by the way, have you seen Oculus?
No, I haven't.
I'll let you borrow it. It's bad. It's awesome.
That on my list.
Oculus is good. Oculus is another one of those that's just, it's unsettling. And you're watching it and you just, because Flanagan's such a master, and this is one of his first couple of movies, but he's just, you're just like, it's a room with a mirror in it, and you're just like, oh, I don't feel good, I need to leave. It's so good. So,
Split, which is a movie that I love. I love the trilogy, but James McAvoy in Split is just, the guy should have got an Oscar for that performance, dude. It is unreal how he could go between characters and do each one so well. That is acting. That's not Tom Cruise being in a movie where it's Tom Cruise being a race car driver or Tom Cruise being a bartender. That's fucking acting, dude. Split is a great movie. Get Out, which, of course, everybody knows about what that did with Jordan Peele and the masterful job he did with that. Happy Death Day, which it took me a long time to give it a chance. I'll be totally honest with you, because for some reason it reminded me of, like we were talking a little while ago, those 90s PG-13 horror movies that
kind of seemed like
was one of the reasons I didn't want to watch horror movies anymore. But I ended up finally watching it, and it was really, really good. The Halloween remake.
Yes. Well, it wasn't a remake.
Well, yeah, it was a sequel.
I really enjoyed that.
I did too.
It took you a while to come around to that one.
Yeah, it took you a while to get to it, to go ahead and watch it. But yeah, I definitely enjoyed that one too. Lords of Salem with Rob Zombie. The guy has just done this, the Belko experiment. I don't know if you ever watched the Belko experiment, but it's a...
I know what it's about. I just haven't had a chance.
It's a fun one. It's definitely a fun movie. Did you watch Brightburn?
Mm-mm.
Okay, you got to check out Brightburn too then. Of course, that's James Gunn, of course.
Right.
I mean, he does so well. But Belko Experiment, I actually love the story. The story is phenomenal. The movie could have been done a little bit better, in my opinion, as far as storyline and stuff. But the main plot of it is, it's a fun movie. They have a great cast in it. I mean, Mike Rooker's even in it. Definitely try to check that one out if you ever get a chance. Let's see what else we got.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, week before last, that's how you say that phrase, when we were talking about De Laurentiis and how he just has all of these hits under his belt. Blumhouse, or Jason Blum's still pretty young.
Yeah.
You know?
He's got a long way to go.
He's got a long way to go, and they're especially, like I said, I would say that, you know, all of these movies that you're talking about are, not only are they big box office hits, but they're also cult hits.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, they're drawing people to things like Shudder,
yeah.
You know, they're holding up the end, that end of Netflix, you know, which, I mean, there's some really horrible horror movies on Netflix, but if you're picking up a Blumhouse production,
yeah, just would be good. Yeah. One of the ones, I think it's on Netflix right now, if I'm not mistaken. I know it was, but The Green Inferno. I don't know if you ever saw that one. It's another Blumhouse one. That one, that's a rough watch.
Is it?
That one is gory, dude. It yeah, there's some scenes in that movie that'll make you damn. It's a rough one to watch, but it's a good one. He had Ouija, which came out a while back. Creep, which is another one that I've heard some really, really great things about, and I'll be 100% honest with you. I tried watching it one night, but I tried watching it really, really late, and I fell asleep pretty quick because I was just tired. I need to give it a try again because there's actually two of them. There's Creep 1 and Creep 2, but I definitely need to check that one out. He had an Amityville... movie came out in 2017. The entire Insidious series, which I think of three movies total, and each one, that's a pretty scary series too. That's a pretty good series that he had there. But he's just, there's so much stuff that Jason Blum has done, and he's just going to keep going with it. And he's one of the reasons why he was able to find a formula that works to the point to where you're always going to give a Blumhouse movie a chance.
Right. Well, and with the volume that he puts out too,
yeah.
That even if one falls, then there's going to be something else probably either at the same time or coming right after it. Cuz, you know, like just like with everything, which it's funny me sitting here saying this in a critical way, since we talk about like the 80s was the 80s was run by sequels, right? It's like there's very few movies that you have in your head that you really are thoroughly endeared with the first one because you sat around watching it on HBO when you were a kid. It's Creepshow 2.
Yeah.
You saw The Raft more often than you ever saw you know, anything out of Creepshow 1, right? Like, mm-hmm. That's just the way that it worked back then, because the rights for the classic first movie were not held by these studios like HBO and Cinemax and stuff. The Universal would give you Jaws 3 all day long, but you had to pay for part one, right? So, you know, so like House 2, you know, like all of these different sequels to movies that you watched a lot when you were a kid. Now then Blumhouse actually did the same formula. So there's Paranormal Activity all the way, you know, there's Paranormal Activity like 6, I think.
Yeah.
And Insidious, there's 3 of them. Sinister, there's 2 of them. They're working on two sequels to Halloween. The Grudge was one. I think there's like two or three Grudges, and I think there's even more talking about. Blumhouse is talking about a reboot of the Grudge. It's like there's a volume of content coming at you to where if you don't like it, I mean it's a scattershot. It's a shotgun approach.
Right.
You know, if one of them doesn't hit you, like two or three of these other ones will, and hit you where it counts, like Sinister.
Mm-hmm.
One of my greatest, like without giving away Sinister, but like my little girl was like 2 years old, 2.5, something like that, and I came home from watching Sinister, completely disturbed, and I go to sleep, and for whatever reason, the hallway light is on, and my little one hits our bedroom door, which is normally closed and latched. She hits our bedroom door. It pops and shutters on its hinges, and she's standing there sleepwalking, standing against a backlight of the hallway with her head down like this and going, "Mama." I scampered off the bed and hit the floor. I don't think I slept the rest of the night. My heart was just like...
Right.
And that's the effect of that film. You know, any other night it would have been like, huh, what? What you need, babe? That day...
The movie put something in the back of your mind.
almost killed me, right?
Yeah, and some of the ones he has coming out soon. There's a Fantasy Island movie that he made. I never saw that one. That one never got released, did it?
No, it came out, but everybody thought it sucked.
Okay. Well, he misses sometimes.
Of course.
One thing,
he's not the director. He's a producer.
But what's funny is... You still give it a chance because it's Blumhouse. And the biggest example I have, you know how I feel about remakes. I hate remakes. I gave the Black Christmas remake a chance. It was a miss. It was freaking horrible. I hated that movie. But it's not going to get me to stop watching Blumhouse movies.
True.
Because he hits a lot more than he misses. Of course, he had Invisible Man that came out. In 2021, he's got The Forever Purge. Another Purge movie is coming out. Halloween Kills. And then in 2022, Halloween Ends, which ought to be. Those are two definitely to look forward to.
Certainly. Well, yeah. So tonight, because it's Friday, so you go old school, man. Order a pizza. Get them to deliver the 2-liter. You got a hurricane coming in the south, so ain't people going to be playing outside. You know? Kick back. Turn on Shudder. Turn on Netflix, whatever. And
find a Blumhouse movie.
Find a Blumhouse movie, man. It'd be awesome. All right, brother. Well, I think that does it for this one. Let's shut it down so we can turn the page and get to episode 160.
Jesus.
I know. All right. We'll see you, next Wednesday?
See you next Wednesday.